This was the sound that filled the streets of several communities across the Russian Empire in 1892. In today's podcast, Colonialism and Its Consequences in the Light of the 1892 Cholera Epidemic, we are going to embark on a journey and follow the spread of the empire's fifth cholera outbreak. Industrial towns and intermodal transportation were intrinsically linked by waterways and railways, which carried the diseased and subsequently a fog of chaos and fear. We will start our historical voyage at the border of Persia and Russia and explore several major towns affected by cholera while addressing the worker-peasant experience during this epidemic. Along the way, we will discuss some of the root causes and conspiracies that led to uprisings in the form of riots, strikes, and violence that broke out across the landscape in response to the government's sanitation protocols. The natural mistrust and underlying social tension that forms in a colonial society reared its ugly head as authorities struggled to obtain compliance from the worker peasants and other ethnic groups. Were these resistance mobs actually mindless fools filled with madness, as some newspapers of the time had described? Or did they have a reason to fight that they felt was worth dying for? How were these people on the margins of society affected by the outbreak? And how might they have uniquely contributed to the spread? A few tools to help us navigate our journey are two maps. The first is a map published in 1892 of the spread of cholera. On the map are a series of red arrows starting out near the Caspian Sea, where the epidemic first entered Russian territory from Persia through present-day Mashhad, Iran. Although the shifting faint arrows reveal the nonlinear nature of cholera itself, we'll first travel north up the Volga, west throughout European Russia, north to St. Petersburg, east to Central Asia and the Kazakh steppe, and conclude our journey in Siberia in an attempt to mimic the general flow and diminution of the spread. Our second map, published in 1890, reflects towns where there was production of precious metals and gold mines. We will use this map to make stops along the way and discuss the factory and mining conditions of worker peasants and how the industrial lifestyle may have contributed to the spread and the riots. Are you ready to embark? In May of 1892, word came to Kachka, a town not far from the Russian border, that cholera had appeared in Mashhad. It was only a matter of time before the disease spread to Kachka on May 31st and Ashgabat shortly after. This was the beginning of an outbreak in Imperial Russia that took hundreds of thousands of lives in a relatively short period of time. One of the most highly regarded records of this outbreak was written by Frank Clement, who offered a thorough account of the impacts and coping mechanisms related to cholera. Clement's goal was to provide data and evidence to the Conference on Cholera, which served as a global convening around solutions that could be implemented to put this disease to an end. While it is a phenomenal work in its description of death rates, numbers of cases, medical treatments, and government response, Clement barely scratches the surface on the widespread panic and human experience of the commoners. By the nature of his assignment, his focus was relatively limited to the epidemiological nature of cholera and the bureaucratic strategies that were most effective in maintaining national control. While Clement's publication is deep and rich, considering the level of knowledge and access that the year 1892 might provide, we are going to attempt to see a different side of this story. From the border towns, cases began rising around the Caspian Sea. Krasnovodsk, Baku, Astrakhan, and others were all impacted early on in the outbreak with little to no preventative measures in place. Baku was described as a frightful spectacle filled with panic and uncertainty. At one point, 44,000 people left overnight, and in the subsequent days, few new people were arriving into the town. Commerce had entirely stopped, and there was no outdoor activity with the exception of funerals and police hurrying around, taking the sick from their homes to cholera quarantine barracks. Like Baku, citizens of Astrakhan were also horrified and began to flee the town, carrying the disease with them and spreading it across the Russian Empire. While cholera itself was a highly unpleasant experience, it wasn't nearly the main source of flight. On July 10, 1892, it was reported that there were riots breaking out in Astrakhan. The worker peasants claimed that the sick were being put in hospitals, some against their own will, for minor health discomforts, not even related to cholera, and some were even buried alive. The idea of having a loved one taken into a cholera hospital sounded like a death sentence because it was believed that the Russian authorities were taking advantage of the population and causing more deaths while everyone was in such a vulnerable state. Immense confusion and fear set in after rumors spread that within the quarantine barracks there was little medical attendance to the infected and food and water were scarce. An eighth of the population participated in the riot, which sparked a question. Were they as ignorant as the press described them to be? The population flight from Astrakhan and Baku caused cholera to spread like wildfire, and the conspiracies of planned class murder traveled with them. Myths began circulating among the lower class circles that the Russian authorities were poisoning the waterways and streams. In turn, popular rage arose towards anyone who belonged to the elites. There were political tensions and brutal repressions towards leadership. In Saratov, a port town on the Volga River, hospitals were described as death chambers. Peasant tradesmen and mechanics attacked and killed a medical assistant. They demolished the residence of the chief of police, ransacked shops, burned down books and formal documents, destroyed cholera charts, looted the new central hospital, and massacred all of its staff members. In Pokrovsk, physicians' homes were destroyed, a hospital was attacked, and a medical assistant was killed. In Volsk, an enraged mob took over the town for 3 days. In Serdobsk, east of the Volga River, 300 houses were burned down. All across central Russia, in cities like Serdanok, Tubanand, Tolinoy, Zamisha, Balakovo, and Triduaya, physicians, pharmacists, and government buildings were seen as targets of oppression. To say Imperial Russia was in a state of chaos in the summer of 1892 is an understatement. Although government officials had protocols for taking people into quarantine, many were being escorted out of their homes against their own will at the smallest reporting. Nurses and medical assistants were drinking excessively to avoid catching the disease, which caused them to neglect their own patients. Eventually, a 24-hour protocol was implemented because of the complaints that people were being buried alive. Poor mental health and malnourishment due to the famine in 1891 made the population easily infected. It was reported in some incidents that the sanitary officials demanded bribes for passing cattle. Regardless of whether the cattle had cholera or not, these sanitation officials would slaughter them if they didn't receive payment from the peasants. This was an opportunity to take advantage of the working poor, which further contributed to the rage within the worker peasant population. In addition to the cholera riots, due to conspiracy theories about a mass class execution, there were further uprisings that naturally erupted which were long overdue. In Donetsk, formerly named Husovka, the Hughes Steel Works and Collieries Company employed thousands of workers in mines and factories. On August 1st, a report was released that a mob stoned police officers who were removing a woman to the hospital. These workers set the hospital and pharmacy on fire after rescuing the woman from the pre-planned death chamber. The mob then invaded factories and burned down nearly the entire town. 23 people were killed, 7 burned to death, 5 injured, and 1 missing. They plundered the food of the elites and vented out their frustrations violently on the Cossacks and authority. Another industrial village, Yuzovka, was a significant site for worker resistance within the iron, coal, and railway production companies. Yuzovka was in contention with Ekaterinoslav Gubernia landowners, but both were essential production centers, as portrayed in our 1890 map. Both sites had mining quarters which were overcrowded, unsanitary, and degrading. The majority of the workers in Yuzovka were Russian peasants, 20,000 to be exact, who relocated from their hometowns in response to the famine. They were encouraged by authorities that they would find good industrial and mining jobs, but were thoroughly disappointed. In Donetsk, Yuzovka, and Ekaterinoslav, peasants worked long hours under harsh physical conditions where many were killed or injured regularly. Plans for a strike existed long before cholera, and the riots in Astrakhan and Baku became an inspiration. Migrants were half-starved and ill-clothed. when they brought cholera with them to these towns. After the riots broke out in Donetsk, the peasants preached disciplined strikes, which were met with harsh regime brutality. The Tatars from Kazan, who were relatively compliant, were brought in to take their place. However, the most famous and deadly of all the uprisings were the riots in Tashkent. News of the severity of the civil unrest spread around the world, even reaching Mumbai, India. The Times of India reported that 60 people were killed and over 100 people were wounded. What happened? Why was this resistance in particular so deadly? On July 6, 1982, the riots broke out in Tashkent, Sirdarya. Native Sarts had evidence to believe that medical staff were poisoning cholera patients and inflicting cruelty on the sick. The people gathered in mosques and responded by invading the Russian quarter, storming the government's office, and stoning him to death in an alleyway of the town. Authorities opened fire on the Sarts, but they didn't retreat. They used pistols and daggers to fight the Cossacks, and they were very difficult to disperse. When the riot was settled, the protesters didn't stop there. They reconvened in the mosques and converted them into forts. They opened fire on the government officials and were then further subdued by the officials. The town was patrolled day and night moving forward. A clear trend across these events, whether it was the fear of hospitals and medical professionals or labor resistance movements, was that the cholera epidemic of 1892 amplified social tension among the members of the community. The pessimism circulating around the outbreak and subsequent deaths, combined with government-imposed anti-cholera measures, created defiance and civil unrest. Whether the threats were perceived or real, these issues were a reflection of the distrust and disappointment commoners had in the government's actions. Some individuals in authority, like the doctors in the Kazakh steppe, caught on to the need to build bridges of trust with the people. In the Kazakh steppe, most of the people's medical needs were neglected. Old tribal boundaries had been replaced with territorial ones in 1867 and 1868. Those who fled from Astrakhan came to the steppe region, which furthered the spread. In addition, the Kazakhs ventured to the Caspian Sea to trade with Russians in mines, on seasonal agricultural fields, or in the wharfs where they contracted cholera. At first, the Kazakhs denied the existence of the disease and refused to cooperate with medical professionals. While there were not murderous uprisings, some Kazakhs did exhibit a form of passive resistance. There were incidents where they stole medical professionals' horses, denied them transportation, and kept themselves at a distance in general from any type of medical care. Some mullahs were inciting rebellion against doctors' orders or retaliated against doctors who tried to uphold sanitation standards at funerals. However, these doctors who sought to build trust discovered that the Tatars of Kazan, Russian villagers, and Indian peasants were mostly anxious to keep burial customs and feared the rumors that the medical professionals would murder or poison them. They saw how the veterinary doctors treated animals and slaughtered those that were infected with the disease. They feared that they too would be slaughtered or burned down in their yurts. Eventually, after showing the people that medicine and treatments were safe by demonstrating taking the treatments themselves, the people became willing to trust. This story was violent, bloody, and totally chaotic, but it didn't end in madness. Despite the major losses of life, cholera was an opportunity for fundamental characteristics of epidemic crises to rise to the surface. Cholera revealed and intensified social tensions, cultural othering, unequal relations of power, and poor value systems that were otherwise suppressed. There are many perspectives missing from the story of the 1892 outbreak. There is very little evidence, but it is possible that cholera did affect the prison systems in Far East Siberia, or that uprisings in response to the disease may have occurred in the mining towns just west of Vladivostok. However, the intensity of the disease diminished as it traveled further east. Many of the prisoners weren't given a voice when historians were writing down history, so it's unclear what impacts there were in Siberia. The uprisings occurred in almost every part of the empire, especially in towns that were closer to the Caucasus regions and the Caspian Sea, where the lower class population was higher. There were no recorded uprisings in major European Russian cities like Kiev, Moscow, and St. Petersburg, which might be due to their higher level of education, stricter censorship, and more widespread compliance, although this hypothesis would have to be tested and further explored. The mining industries were naturally vulnerable to the spread of cholera because of their poor sanitation, harsh working conditions, connection to transportation, and lack of education among the working class. These events are a wealth of knowledge for better understanding why uprisings happen and how to reduce the negative impacts of future epidemics from a social standpoint. Are governments today taking note and working to build bridges of trust with those groups which they've colonized? Thanks for listening.